Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Hello again, Colm O'Mungain here standing in for Claire. Well, in the past hour, the Taoiseach and Foreign Affairs Minister Micheál Martin has had a standoff with hecklers and protesters at the first session of the Consultative Forum on International Security Policy.
Could I also say, I think the most undemocratic thing you could do is try and shut down debate, and that's what you're trying to do here this morning. You are trying to shut down debate. You're behaving in a manner that's intolerant of the freedom of speech. You don't want to allow other views to come forward. What you're saying is debate on your terms and on nobody else's terms. But that's not what we're going to do today. We're going to debate these issues.
All right, the Minister for Defence in defensive form there down at the Consultative Forum on International Security Policy. Brian O'Connell joins us from University College Cork, where that event is taking place. Brian, good morning to you.
Good morning, Colm. You can hear there are quite testy exchanges in the past hour, as you said, as this consultative forum got underway. In fact, protesters had gathered at the gates of UCC from about 8 a.m. this morning, and then they proceeded onto the college campus where they formed a protest as the attendees entered. They were made up of a coalition such as the Peace and Neutrality Alliance, the Irish Neutrality League, the Irish Anti-War Movement. Many were very much echoing the words and thoughts of President Michael D. Higgins. They were taking issue with the background of some of the speakers attending events over the coming days, and they were also unhappy, some of them, that the forum was being held here and not somewhere they felt like City Hall. It's been held in the basement lecture theatres here in UCC. So it began with the president of UCC, Professor John O'Halloran. He opened the event, he welcomed the Taoiseach, and John O'Halloran talked about the role of universities as places of thinking, as places of public discourse. He said that independent thinking means it was appropriate that UCC was hosting this event today. But as you heard, it was when Taoiseach Micheál Martin began the opening remarks that this organised protest inside the lecture theatres began. What happened was six protesters unfurled a banner referencing NATO, and then they began making speeches and objecting to the forum, objecting to the makeup of the speakers at the event today and over the coming days. It went on, I would say, Colin, for up to about 15, 20 minutes. The Taoiseach tried to speak.
All right. We seem to have a bit of bother with the line there from Brian O'Connell. We may come back to him, but I'm joined in studio. That was the present. We're going to go to the past now and have a look at the evolution of Ireland's current security policy. Dr. Michael Kennedy, historian with the Royal Irish Academy, is with us in studio. And Michael, of course, you're involved in the Documents in Irish Foreign Policy project as well, that's released several volumes, many of which examine how Ireland got to where it is today with regards to its security policy.
That's right, Colin.
The
yeah.
buzzword neutrality.
Yeah.
I mean, the foundational document of the state, the proclamation in 1916, talks about our gallant allies in Europe. When did we stop having military allies and start going down the road of a principled stance on neutrality?
I think a principled stance on neutrality arises out of this, that same period you're talking about, 1916, James Connolly's slogan, neither King nor Kaiser but Ireland. It's been a long-term, I think, goal of Irish nationalism, republicanism, separatism, that Ireland would not get involved in great power wars, would not get involved in imperialist ventures, and would not get involved in security or military matters that were detrimental to its own national interest, to the national interest of the people of Ireland. Now, the change, if you like, to a more specific form of neutrality comes in the run-up to the Second World War, that Ireland had supported the League of Nations. We joined 100 years ago this year. De Valera was a champion of the League of Nations right up to the very end. But he started making it clear from the mid-1930s, as the League was failing, that Ireland would look after its own interests. A European war was very likely, and Ireland would look after those interests by declaring itself neutral and would try to see its way through the war as a neutral. We were a lucky neutral. We were in the right place. Look at Luxembourg, Belgium, other European neutrals were steamrolled over by the Wehrmacht. And the defence forces planned either for an invasion across the border from Britain or a seaborne invasion into the south coast of Ireland.
And they were right to plan for both, weren't they?
They were, because remember, Britain invaded Iceland in 1940, unopposed.
Norway as well.
The Wehrmacht had its plans to invade Ireland. Now, we know they were technically impossible in retrospect, but as the Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces during the war, Dan McKenna said, who am I neutral against? And that's kind of the nub of the problem we're looking at here, that we have failed, I think, over 100 years to have a comprehensive debate on security policy, failed to equip the Defence Forces effectively to do the job that they're to undertake, whatever the mission.
Has one informed the other, the unwillingness to equip the Defence Forces, has that led to a lack of ambition in security policy? And by ambition, I mean the ability to defend the island. Which comes first, I suppose, in that scenario?
I think what comes first, and I want to look more at the post-war period here, because we know a lot about neutrality and the kind of the pro-allied or flexible form of neutrality we had during the Second World War. Post-war is a little bit more of a mystery to people because it hasn't really been explored by academics. The fundamental tenet of state policy after the Second World War is to endeavour to remain neutral in future wars and be able to defend itself. That's a cabinet decision from the 18th of April 1946. There it is in black and white. Endeavour to remain neutral and be able to defend itself. Now, how do you go about defending yourself? What are the threats? What do the Defence Forces need? And that's where the debate always seems to stall. And from, you know, I'm looking at this as a historian, as a public historian, trying to inform, hopefully, listeners and students, those who read the documents in Irish Foreign Policy Series, which is available online. You can read all the documents I'm talking about here, difp.ie. The problem is that we come to that point again and again in the historical narrative. We need to be able to defend ourselves, but either the will, the money, the ethos isn't there to do it. The political will, the economic capability, defence is expensive.
Right, which gets cruelly exposed in the 1960s when soldiers are sent to a peace enforcement mission in the Congo. Their equipment, their uniforms, everything is substandard with fatal consequences.
Yeah, and that's not just our fault, if you like. The UN was at fault there because it really didn't know what it was sending Irish troops and Swedish troops and Indian troops into, but the Swedes and the Indians were much better equipped. So there is a problem there through the 1950s. Frank Aiken, as Minister for External Affairs, and in dealing with defence matters as well through that portfolio, wants Ireland to have an armed neutrality. Now, that is the basis of policy. But it fails to be because simply the money isn't there. The political will to properly equip the defence forces in a period of economic downturn where the people of Ireland are emigrating, where there's considerable distress in the country,
all right,
it's just not possible.
But in the beginning, when Ireland had aspirations to go into the European Union, there is a kind of a tension within the government, is there? There's Frank Aiken, who you mentioned, who wants to be neutral and operating on the global peacekeeping stage. And Sean Lamass is entertaining thoughts behind the scenes that ultimately, if the European Union, the EEC as it then was, ends up with a security architecture, then Ireland is willing to pay that price.
Well, that's something, again, that we need to go back and look at, that the major political figures of the 1940s and 50s, from time to time, do speak in favour of an Irish commitment to European defence. If you look at the cabinet memorandum on NATO membership, the response to the United States saying we don't want to join NATO, the line in it reads that we're joining NATO, we're not joining NATO, we don't want to join NATO, not because of neutrality, but because of the partition of Ireland. And the last sentence of paragraph 2 reads, with the general aim of the proposed treaty, the Irish government is in agreement. Frank Aiken of the Council of Europe talks in favour of European defence. Off the record, Liam Cosgrave, Minister for External Affairs, talks in favour of the Western European Union. And Lamass says in 1961, the position of the Irish government is today, as it was in 1949, one of agreement with the aims of the NATO treaty, and they regret the persistence of circumstances which preclude the consideration of participation therein. Partition. So there's a general a view that we could be involved in Western European defence, but the other side of it, as some of his civil servants say, is, well, what could we actually do if we were involved? And NATO hasn't come knocking on the door.
Right, which apparently it hasn't yet. We're going to go back to Brian O'Connell, who's on the line with us from Cork. Brian, we lost you there at the top. What's the latest from there at the moment? The Taoiseach had that standoff, and you mentioned as well that the chair was heckled too.
Yes, apologies, Colm. There's a lot of talk about security, and I could do with a secure Wi-Fi connection, I could tell you. In terms of the content and the tone so far, the Taoiseach talked about the fact these are challenging times where we've witnessed a blatant disregard for international law. And he talked about the need to invest in military and civilian expertise to respond. It was a wide-ranging speech, really. He talked about that changed international landscape and needing to ensure the conversation about choice in terms of security policy would be based on fact and on evidence. There are 80 different panellists and moderators, and he, I suppose, talked up some of the backgrounds in relation to peacekeeping experience across the globe. And he said we could have a more informed and confident decisions which would be based on facts. And again, he spoke as well about his family, his own family. He's got quite emotional, I thought, talking about his own family's military history, both in Ireland and overseas. And then after the Taoiseach was finished, Professor Louise Richardson, as I said, whose chair took to the floor, and she talked after the interruption and the protest, and that protester left. She talked very much about robust civility, about a principle of listening, she said, to the other side. And that really was the tone of her opening remarks. Now, the first session is underway underneath me here in the Boulle Theatre in UCC, and this is looking at global security environment. So it continues throughout the day. Perhaps we expect Louise Richardson to make some comments to the media later on this evening.
All right, Brian O'Connell joining us from Cork, and Dr. Michael Kennedy, historian with the Royal Irish Academy. Thanks very much for joining us. Why don't women who are on maternity leave get the time back that they spent in cancer treatment? We'll find out after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.